This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you for staying to the end. There's been a slight change, obviously, because I was one of, a number of people who were speaking, and I wasn't actually going to speak. I was actually going to do an interactive workshop, but seeing there is only me, I've taken some slides that I've talked through previously. You'll be delighted to know I've cut them down quite dramatically, so I'm not going to speak at you. For a long time. It does sort of feel like a bit like match of the day on a Saturday night. You know, Manchester United have been on, Chelsea have been on, Arsenal have been on. It's nearly midnight. Gary Lineker's gone home and it's Stoke versus Blackpool. But that's a 4-4 draw and it's a good game. So hopefully you'll be interested in what I'm going to say. And what I'm going to talk about this afternoon is an employee engagement programme that is well established in Birmingham, has been set up. At the heart of it is fundamentally about behaviour change. Obviously, my interest, I'm head of organisation development and learning at Birmingham. Our interest in terms of behavioural change is obviously internally focused, but an awful lot of what I've heard today, there's a lot of commonality between the focus on using behavioural change techniques to public policy as much as there is behavioural change internally. I suppose change is my métier being head of organisation development. It's a bit of a conversation killer in a pub when someone says, what do you do? And you say, I'm head of organisation development. Then everyone always says, well, what on earth's that then? And try explaining it. I suppose change is what it's about. It is about change, but the approaches are whole systems. Approach. It assumes that actually, in order to change effectively, we've got to change the whole system, which means taking action right across the piece. So I want to talk very briefly about BEST, just to give you some context. I don't know how many people have actually heard of or are aware of the programme. Okay, so some of you. So I won't labour it, but obviously for those who've not come across it, I do want to just run through what it is. And then I'm just going to show a short piece of video, partly because I often think when you come to conferences, you sort of hear people speak about what's happened, and sometimes you're sort of left with, well, has it actually had that impact, or is that just a nice PowerPoint? And actually, there's some real people with Brummie accents telling you what they think about the programme and the effect that it's had. Just a bit of context, Birmingham, largest urban local authority in Europe. We have 60,000 employees. We're about to have a significantly fewer employees. We think it'll go down by a factor of certainly about a sixth over the next 3 years. We work out of 600 plus locations in Birmingham, which it is the second city. So if anyone's from Manchester, be in no doubt, Birmingham is the second city. In terms of size, as much as anything else, Birmingham's the same size as Liverpool and Manchester put together. We serve 1 million citizens in a relatively compact geographical area, actually. And because we work out 600 locations, in a sense, we might as well be a global organisation for the barriers that creates and the difficulties in terms of engaging and communicating with people. I'm going to take you back in time to the inception of the programme, which was in 2006. We knew from surveying our staff, we had a problem with commitment, with trust, both in politicians and in senior managers. There was a lot of initiative fatigue. We'd been forever changing in Birmingham. I think the one thing that never changed was the fact that we were always changing or seemed to do it. And we branded every initiative that came in terms of change. And I think, you know, listening this morning and this afternoon, actually a lot of those approaches then, and I hold up my hand, I was responsible for some of them, took a very cognitive sort of approach. Actually, it was about arguing the case, creating a compelling case for change, as if actually someone would sit there and go, oh, no, you're right, actually. No, I need to change, of course. And they sort of came, they lasted, and then they went. It was a bit like a Catherine wheel at a fireworks party. You know, a lot of bright lights, didn't last very long, and actually everyone was left a bit sort of low at the end of it, or underwhelmed. In 2006, we had a new incoming chief executive and also a new incoming political arrangement. So we've sort of pioneered the LibCon or ConLib pact, They've been in power since this time, after 20-odd years of Labour rule. So came in with a lot of fresh ideas and wanted to take a different approach. Also, at this time, we were about to embark upon business transformation. So I think an earlier speaker from North Dorset spoke about big investment in technology. We were about to do that. In Birmingham's case, that was about £500 million worth of investment to realise £2 billion worth of savings over the next 10 years. And we were also going through the small matter of a pay and grading review at the time, whereby actually we were taking money off an awful lot of staff, as well as giving some to other people. So actually the environment wasn't necessarily conducive for change and for a lot of these sort of messages. This is at the time how we defined the behaviours that we wanted to, the behaviours that we'd observed and broadly where we wanted to move forward. We realised if we were about to make this sort of investment in a lot of ICT infrastructure and fundamentally change the way that we worked, that actually we needed a consequent change in attitudes and behaviours. And one of the things we did at the time is we had done a lot of work in terms of looking at, well, what were the behaviours that people saw? What, both in terms of what did people see happening when things were going really well, but also what was getting in the way of that. And we got lots of stories from our staff, and one of them I'll just tell, which involves refuse collection and street cleansing. So there are two types. So refuse collection is household collections, and in Birmingham, that happens in black bags. So you put your refuse collection, it's weekly, you put it in black bags, and you must put your black bag at the end of the drive. Street cleansing is done by a separate part of the organisation. They walk along the streets and collect the litter, and they put those in grey bags. And then having collected in the grey bags, the street cleansers will actually put it around designated lampposts, and once or twice a day, a lorry will come along and collect those grey bags and take them off to refuse. Now, our residents, being quite a bright lot generally, had noticed that actually there were bags building up around lampposts, and if they got a full black bag during the week, actually what they could do is take it across the road and put their bag with the other pile of bags, which would then be collected. But of course it wouldn't be collected because it was in a black bag, and street cleansing only do grey bags. So along would come the lorry, and we'd pick off the black bags, throw the grey bags onto the truck, but then put the black bag back because that's not street cleansings. So then the residents would phone up when there was a collection of black bags, because actually it's starting to smell and be unsightly. But refuse collection couldn't come and get them, because actually, while they do black bags, they only collect them from the bottom of drives. They don't collect them from around lampposts. And this was a story that we told, really illustrative of some of the behaviours that we wanted to change. Now, picking up on something that the Maori guy said was, actually, if you look at that on one level, you could say that is the fault of our refuse collectors and our street cleansers. But actually, in terms of looking at causality, understanding where that behaviour comes from, in terms of actually empowering our staff to take the actions that are necessary to implement the service, to implement a good service, whatever that might be. And there was, you know, an issue about actually the way in which we managed our people as much as anything else, rather than actually the people on the front line. And when we spoke to refuse collectors and street cleansers, they were perfectly aware of the situation and thought it was equally idiotic. But actually, they were told that, no, this is your job. So part of the BEST programme and part of the behavioural change was fundamentally to empower the people on the front line to take those decisions. If they saw something that needed fixing, then fix it. They're the people who know how to deliver these services. So what did we create? Well, we had a set of values anyway. Belief, excellence, success and trust, hence BEST. We developed those. Like any good HR people, we developed a set of values, and we were very proud that we had values. But what on earth do you do with them? It's all very well having values, but unless you live them, unless you understand what the behaviours are, then they're meaningless. Really. So out of this, we developed the BEST programme. And the BEST programme was and is, because it's running still to this day, really based upon the notion that while you have transformation, which quite typically is involved with large-scale investment, is premised on the notion that actually your performance is here and after transformation it will be here, and somehow you're going to leap straight up there. Actually, this is based on transformation also happens by multiple very small actions. What we were interested in doing is empowering all of the teams, encouraging all teams to change their behaviour, to put into place those small actions which actually make a difference for them and for their service users. They didn't have to be about the big set-piece transformation. Actually, you can also achieve fundamental change in behaviour and fundamental transformation by multiple small actions. And so that is what the programme was. In order to bring that alive, we devised a very simple approach, which was actually we would get every team in the council to run a workshop, which would be facilitated by a member of that team. Now, we took the decision that actually the person who facilitated that absolutely should not be the manager. So we created what we call best leaders. You might call them change agents, whatever. Their primary task was once a year to facilitate that conversation with their team members. And using those four values of belief, excellence, success and trust, look as a team at where they were against each of those. We didn't actually tell them precisely what those values were. We gave them an indicator of these are the typical sort of behaviours that we're looking for. But we got them to define them for themselves, because when you're talking, as all of you who work in local authorities know, when you talk about local authority, you're talking about probably 200 to 300 different types of service. You know, this had to work with home carers, with street cleansers, with lawyers, with architects, with town planners, with accountants. So actually we needed something which was relatively simple, which was scalable and flexible as well. So it was team-based, bottom-up. Thinking in terms of pilots, we took the decision, or rather the chief executive, much to my horror, took the decision very early on that actually if we were going to do this, we were going to all do it and all do it at the same time. Birmingham had a history of running pilots. I think we've talked about pilots earlier today, you know, testing it ad nauseam to see whether it actually worked. Actually missing the point that actually if you're going to get change, especially behavioural change, you have to do something. People have to do something because behaviour is about doing. And actually if we were going to do it and make the impact that we wanted to make, then actually all of us together were going to do it. So we identified 1,800 best leaders. We got the teams to nominate. I'd be lying if I said when they turned up on the training for best leaders that all of them knew why they were there. We had the typical range of people who were ranging from the volunteers to the conscripts to the prisoners of war. There were people who said, yeah, I'm up for change. I'm really interested in leading this. There are other people who said, actually, I'd popped out to the toilet while they were having a discussion and I came back and found I was the best leader. And there are other people who didn't really know why they were there, but they just hadn't been involved in the conversation. They'd been told by their manager that they needed to be there. But we trained 1,800 best leaders in 6 weeks in groups of between 80 and 100 at a time, over half a day, literally taking them through this very simple workshop idea. So the workshop lasts for about 3 hours. As I say, it's team-based, run by that team member, and it's about a conversation. And the one thing that we asked people to do, well, we asked them to do two things. One is to score themselves against those values out of 10. So where did they think they were as a team against belief, against excellence, against success and against trust? And then we asked them to identify three simple actions that they could take, which would actually make a difference to them as a team and to their service users as well. And those actions had to be within their control. It had to be something that they did. And therefore, it had to be something at no cost or very, very little cost to them. And we set them on their way. We gave them 3 months at the beginning of 2007 to have these workshops. And then we followed them up, the actions based on the team, customer and partners. And it happened in every council, every team across the council. In the first year, 25,000 staff engaged in a best workshop. So that's pretty much most of our non-schools-based staff. In that first year, we got 6,000 committed actions. And the number one action during that year was to say good morning to each other. And this is the point in this sort of presentation where everyone goes, oh, that's not change, is it? But actually, it is fundamentally behavioural change in the team. Because if the team is not doing that, and they've identified actually that's a starting point for making their work life better, then that's really, really crucial. We had a lot of other actions which were far bigger than that. And when I show you the snippet of a video, it'll highlight some of those. So, for instance, there was the temporary member of staff in a benefits housing benefit processing team who'd only been working with us for 6 weeks, was from Kelly's, who couldn't really understand a particular type of calculation by the DWP, who said, actually, we should challenge that. And that alone realised about £350,000 worth of additional benefit for claimants in the first 6 months and every subsequent 6 months as well from then until this day. We had the library team in Acox Green, which is a suburb of Birmingham, which has at that point certainly had a particularly high influx of Polish immigrants, who'd recognised that actually Polish mothers were bringing their children to the library but couldn't actually use the library service because of the children. So actually linked up with the community to put on a free creche within the community library and allow the community librarians to actually work with the Polish mothers on raising their standard of English. We got housing teams working with residents, running their own best workshops with the residents to understand actually what the residents saw as belief, excellence, success and trust, and what were the three or four really simple things that those teams could do to make neighbourhoods better. So it was fundamentally about creativity and trying to unleash the innovation and energy, really, of our people. I'll talk about some of the other things, but what I'd like to do is run the video, or snippet of the video right now, which is about, this is part of an open space. You'll see the open space. I'll explain about that briefly afterwards. But this is just really best in the words of the people who experienced it and participated in it.
We got the best award for all of our team.
Yeah. Sorry, it's not just me saying it. There are other people, and they weren't paid to say that. It did and continues to create a huge amount of energy around the organisation. Unlike any other change initiative that certainly I've been involved in 15 years, it has a longevity because it's developed. We're continuing to make it relevant. And some of the things I just very, very briefly before I stop, want to really pull out what I think have been some of the key points of learning. And I can't for the life of me remember his name other than the Grit Man, who spoke earlier from Sutton. But he came up with 10 lessons, and I was sitting there thinking, actually, these 10 lessons which he and Sutton have learnt about applying behavioural change in communities to services are absolutely pretty much the 10 lessons that I would have pulled out in terms of applying behavioural change inside the organisation. So the clarity around objectives, segmenting the audience, we absolutely changed the approach for different parts of the council. So, for instance, with our school crossing patrol wardens, lollipop people, who probably work 3 hours a day, an hour and a half in the morning, an hour and a half in the evening. How do you run a best workshop for them? We got 400 of them in the room, and we created cards, a card game for them to use. So we developed different ways for them to engage in the idea, but fundamentally what comes out of it is still the same, is the ideas about how do they improve the services and the changes that subsequently makes. I suppose from being involved in organisation development, It has sort of been mentioned today, but looking internally, one of my principles has always been that within an organisation, the unit of change is not an individual. It's not the individuals, it's the group, it's the teams. And fundamentally what BEST was based upon is actually using teams to change behaviour, because individuals learn their behaviours from the group that they are in. If you can start to change group behaviour, actually that has a much greater effect on individual behaviour than focusing on individual people themselves. He talked about building it into the way in which you work, and what we've done subsequent to that is build the approach to BEST, the approach to behaviours, into our performance management process. We have a dragon's den, which has proved hugely popular, whereby acknowledging that some actions do take a bit of investment. So teams can come along to a panel of dragons, including citizens and members and senior officers, and bid for between £1 and £1,000 to implement their action. But what they have to do is actually show what the return is in terms of better outcomes for the people that they serve. These are just a few pictures of what we've done. What we've always tried to do throughout this, which I think has been the other key point to it, is recognise and celebrate some of the success. I was struck by the Mindscape thing that the Cabinet Office have done, and the idea of creating a new norm. And what we did very early on was recognise that actually using some techniques from marketing rather than traditional communications techniques had a much more powerful effect in terms of take-up. So, for instance, I think probably, in a sense, one of the single best things that we did in terms of communication were small Hessian bags with the BEST logo on them, just about at the time that Marks and Spencer started charging. We bought a lot of Hessian bags. And unbeknownst to us at first, actually employees started up a website, and it was about sending in your photographs with a BEST bag wherever you were in the world. So we had pictures of some, you know, an employee with a BEST bag on Sydney Harbour Bridge and on the Great Wall of China and wherever they went on their holidays. And actually, people had taken the idea and started to develop it themselves. There was a viral element to that. And it is always about actually, from the perspective of change, the best changes are always the ones where people say that they did them, and actually they don't recognise where they came from, and that, I think, is where we've got to with BEST. We've had a lot of talking today. That is a real whistle-stop tour of what we've done. I could talk for ages about it, but I'm happy to take any questions or encourage any debate. Unless, we're just knackered.
Hi, yeah, Jonathan Pilgrim from Making Change Work. I just wondered, how much management time does it take for you and your staff to keep a programme like this going as an overhead?
We were fortunate to get it off the ground. We've always run it as an internal programme as well, and I think our cabinet member sort of made reference to that. This isn't a consultant-led programme, which certainly a lot of transformation has involved a lot of external support. In terms of an ongoing basis, I think we've got a team of about 12. It's about 12, but do see that in the context of Birmingham. It's 12 servicing six directorates with about 25,000 people in it. We think that BEST year on year costs about £20 per employee. There or thereabouts. We have an annual budget now of about £400,000 to keep it going. But a lot of keeping it going is actually the people themselves out in the organisation provide a lot of the momentum. Actually, what the team do is the coordinating activities.
Have you quantified the savings that you've made through the programme? And I suppose linked to that, although savings obviously weren't the primary driver behind it, given the current climate, is it shifting at all to incorporate more of a focus on savings at all?
Well, I think a number of things in response to that. One of the things that we didn't do well, again going back to the Mori presentation, while we had a baseline, it wasn't a terribly accurate baseline, and we had to put a lot of work internally into actually building a better baseline, partly to understand causality. So anecdotally, we can point to, like the case of the benefits, so we know that there's a return there. But actually looking at the benefit of more engaged employees, of the changed behaviour in terms of a bottom line, is much more difficult to actually prove. We're actually part of a consortium of public and private sector looking at this aspect, which is attempting really to come up with some solid measures for how do you actually measure more engaged employees, that behavioural change, and convert that into a bottom line. We've done an awful lot of evaluation and research into the effect. We reckon that it's around about an 8-10% improvement in productivity, which on £3.6 billion turnover organisation is, you know, a significant contribution. I wouldn't like to be challenged in, you know, scientifically on that. And an awful lot of it is, you know, it is awfully, awfully difficult with a programme like this to cut away actually the impact that your actions had from other actions as well.
Heather Wills, Barking and Dagenham. You mentioned the Dragon's Den.
Yes.
And I presume that also part of the ethos around the values is that if people can see something that can be improved in their team, they just get on and do it.
Yes.
But for stuff where people might have a bright idea about something that's wider, doesn't need massive investment, but, you know, involves more people, do you have kind of a staff suggestion scheme or some kind of approach? I'm just interested in how you approach it, because in our organisation, in the past, it's been incredibly bureaucratic and sort of dies. So
I'm about
tips?
Saying, no, we don't have a suggestion scheme. I'm looking at Charlie in the front, he's going, yeah, we do. We do have a suggestion scheme. Certainly, we've had suggestion schemes in the past, and I know they've struggled to really get really get much buy-in to them. We have had quite a number of examples of previously a great example in highways, and working with the teams in highways who literally, you know, they're filling potholes and putting these sleeping policemen and what have you in the ground. And a number of them had the idea long ago. When they're replacing what, I don't even know what they're called, they're the sort of sleeping policemen which are lit with an arrow on them, and cars regularly knock them out. And in order to replace them, they have to actually dig up the road, because they're cemented in or concreted in, dig them up, take them out, and actually put another one in. And it takes about a day, and the disruption in terms of transportation is huge. They develop something which actually clips in. So acknowledging that cars will still knock them over, it actually cut the time by, you know, down to a fraction. Because now when there's a broken sleeping policeman, actually all they do is just pull the broken bit out and slot the new fitting in. And actually that was raised at the best, within their best workshop, but took a significant amount more investment than that, but was taken on. I think what Best has provided is a vehicle to surface those ideas into the organisation, which we haven't had previously. Well, seeing as Gary Lineker's not here, I've certainly found it a fascinating conference today, really, really useful for me. It's just really fascinating for me, who have always had an internal focus, to actually now see the crossover of those disciplines, the impact of behaviour change in a different context as well, and actually how we can apply those principles both in policy and practice, as well as in actually how we manage the organisations that we're all from as well. I hope you found that piece useful. We are ahead of schedule, but I don't actually detect that anyone's too worried about that. So I think this would be the time to say thank you very much and wish you safe journeys home.